Live from Run Your Mouth World Headquarters.
First up, Stormy Daniels takes the witness stand. Here's some audio from her testimony. Then we hear from Trump's lawyer.
These are my tits. There are other tits like it, but these are mine. And they are nice.
Next up, we take a ride on New York City's douchiest bus and talk to the overweight construction worker who has pledged to take his daily shits on it. Republicans explore if Kristi Noem is the right candidate to keep Americans safe from wild beagles. And lastly, we watch the ceremony at the United Methodist First Gay Church.
We're drinking the blood of Christ. Now bring your kids to the front and sit on Santa's lap.
It's your daily dose of misinformation pulled from a lightly hemorrhoided asshole. It's today's Run Your Mouth.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Run Your Mouth podcast. Hell of a weekend being out west with Dave Smith. And I got local shows all this weekend. Come hang out. What do we got? We got Poughkeepsie. I'm closing out a showcase show over there Friday. Then on Saturday, I'm back at Haddam Graber's operation with Lou Perez. That's in Jersey. And then, guys, here's the big one. Wait, let me just make a quick change here. Big one, guys, this Sunday in Brooklyn, 6 p.m. If you're in New York City, please don't miss my comedy show. I stacked that lineup with some of my favorite New York City comics. I got 20 minutes of material you guys have never heard, some of which was relevant for the Donald Trump court case that they're now throwing out. We're going to get to that later in the show. Apparently, the whole actually, my joke still stands. Dude, there's nothing worse. You finally get a joke and it's starting to work and you've been sitting on it for a little while and you keep tweaking it and then it starts working and then the news changes and you're like, please, no, don't change that. I don't even care if that would be a step in the right direction. I'd like to keep telling my joke because people are finally laughing at it. But anyway, Sunday, 6 p.m., come before Mother's Day, come after Mother's Day, bring your mother, tell your mother you don't love her enough not to come to the comedy show. I got a killer lineup. It's the one club I get to work out in New York City, so it'd be nice to have a good show, a showing of the Part of the Problem fans showing up. So if you guys are available on Sunday, coming out for that. And then lastly, PorchTour.com. Get your Porch Tour tickets. At some point, more dates coming soon. I'm still trying to line up a Philadelphia. I just realized I'm going to just stay out on the road. So I think Richmond, Virginia is now en route. I'd still like to hit Boston. I don't know why no one in Boston seems to have a porch. Kate, if you're still out there, you know, let's do another. I don't want to do another bug out this year, or at least not yet. But anyways, porchstore.com loaded with porch dates. First one's going to be out in Florida with Clint Russell. All right, let's get into the show. Because I was away all last week, so we didn't get to do an episode done. So let's start with the Donald Trump court case. What do we got? What do we got, producer man? So firstly is apparently Donald Trump likes being spanked, which they had to ask Stormy to quit being so graphic on the details of the sexual encounter. Because a lot of this court case seems to be showcasing things that aren't against the law or things that the court case aren't quite about. But Stormy Daniels was up at the witness stand giving so much graphic details. Apparently, at times, Donald Trump was cursing. The jurors had their jaws dropped. Donald Trump actually woke up for this part of the presentation. The other parts of court, guy's going to sleep. But all of a sudden, you get Stormy out there, and he said, "That's not what happened. She said she liked. She did not fall asleep. Nobody has ever fallen asleep. Spank me. Oh, yeah, that's the spot. Do it again. Do it again." Well, not only does Donald Trump get peed on by Russian hookers, apparently he likes being spanked as well. This is from The Hill. Daniels even describes spanking the former president with a rolled-up magazine. And then here, this was Jurl Strugger to keep a straight face as Daniels described, once again, spanking the former president with a magazine, but they did not visibly react when she recounted having sex with Trump 77 on a hotel bed in the missionary position. We knew it was the missionary position. You really think the elder gentleman of Donald Trump's stature is moving around? That you're having classic sex. Which, by the way, if you're already just going to have classic missionary sex, do you really need porn stars for that kind of operation? But that's the way Donald Trump was doing it. He likes being spanked. This is what we know so far about Donald Trump's sexual preferences. Sadly, I don't know why one news station can't just give me the recap of this part of it. I don't need to know about the jury's reaction. I don't know about whether or not this helped the prosecutionary side. I don't care about whether or not this helped the defense. Who gives a shit? Just give me the dirty details on how Donald Trump's like screwing his prostitutes. You know, listen, we do a lot of real news on this show all the time. We're reading through science documents. We're trying to disprove COVID agendas. We're reading Supreme Court decisions. If you've got spicy junk food that you can just throw in my lap to keep the world entertaining and exciting, and one of them is someone talking about the way that they had sex with the president, just lay it on me. Just give me the bullet points. Why do I got to go through multiple different articles? Why is it even on a topic like this? I need to do my homework and my research. So this was from the prior day of testimony. Not nearly as exciting, but the prior day of testimony was Trump had some pretty lady on staff. I don't think she was necessarily qualified for the position. I think just, you're hot, you're hired. Okay, you can work here. And so this was from the previous day. New York versus Trump live in the courtroom. Hicks says Trump was very involved in press aspects of his campaign. Once again, reporting on more things that aren't illegal. If you're running for president, you'd probably involved in the aspects of your campaign. Isn't this a pretty incredible court case where you got a guy who went to jail, who is Michael Cohen, who's got to give testimony, and now you've got some porn star who seemingly might have been playing around with the truth a little bit at the stand, and everyone's just showing up and giving testimony to things that we knew happened and aren't illegal. Hush money payments aren't illegal. Having affairs on your wife, they're not illegal. And then hiring women on your staff to report on the fact that you're involved with your campaign and whether or not the hush money payment's going through, once again, as far as I understand, not illegal. We got a whole big court case here of things that are not illegal. All right. And then next up, this was from Zero Hedge. Clothes off, bra on, which that's an interesting one. Because, you know, I guess Donald Trump's been enough with these women that if you got the giant fake cans, they do look better with the bra on. You know, like, that's the thing with giant, like, firstly, just tits in general. Once the bra comes off, you're like, all right, they're there. I don't know. I'm more of a buck guy type thing. I don't know. I'm not anti-tits. That's ridiculous. I mean, what am I, gay? That's not what I'm trying to say. But when it comes to big, fat, fake titties, you know, they do look more intriguing in the bra. I don't know. Where do you guys stand in the chat on this one? But then there's also just the childlike thing of, like, if there's something to remove, I'm going to remove it. But I guess maybe not Donald Trump. He's getting right to action. And luckily, Stormy Daniels. So what do we learn about Donald Trump's sexual preferences? Before sex, he likes to be spanked. And then during sex, he prefers that you keep your bra on. These are some interesting choices. He was just up on the bed like this, she said, pulling her leg up to her waist on the witness stand, which nobody asked for. That's probably the moment when the judge was like, all right, you can relax. We don't actually need this level of a walkthrough of what took place. And once again, I don't even know why she needs to give testimony. Isn't the problem the hush money payment, not the fact that he had sex with her? In other words, Donald Trump, like I said in the last episode, loudest hush money payment ever, is that you got Donald Trump tried to get rid of this story, and he spent $130,000 to make that happen. And now he's got to sit through court and listen to even more of the dirty details than probably would have ran in the news. And he has to actually just sit there, and then he's not allowed to go talk about it because they threatened him with jail time if he violates the gag orders. So he just has to sit there as every little aspect of this gets recounted. And then she goes, she described the experience as feeling like a funhouse and felt things moving in slow motion despite not being drunk or on drugs. Okay, and now this is from The Week magazine. Trump partly Stormy Day in court. With Trump, Drawn Merchant reprimanded Trump, who denies having sex with Daniels, for glowering and cursing audibly during her testimony. So, you know, Donald Trump's been sleeping through the rest of this thing. And then this time he was sitting there.
That's not true. She did not fall asleep. She had so many orgasms. She had more orgasms than Epstein in a massage parlor filled with orphans. Okay? I'm telling you, this lady, she loved it. Everybody loves it. Nobody doesn't like it when they're with me.
And then who said what? Daniels went into such details about what at times sounded like non-consensual sex, that Trump's lawyers complained bitterly that her account of possible sex crime had hopelessly tainted the jury. So, in other words, she was up there, and this is where I might get a little rocky here. Now, this is from the New York Times. With Stormy Daniels saying the sex was brief, she said, and although she never said no, there was a power imbalance. Now, if you're one of these women who believes, I guess, in power imbalances may also factor into the consent that you can have or not have with sex, it doesn't it bother you having Stormy Daniels taking this line of reasoning? Like, I'm just saying, like, you can never have non-consensual sex if for some reason, like, that any of this chatter becomes not clear. And I guess in any instance, you should and will be prosecuted for it. But I guess what I'm saying is, when you've got a person who's a porn star who does not treat sex and, like, the... I'm sure you've spent time on sets getting paid to have sex, and it wasn't always romantic, you know, loving... for lose your virginity sex. Was this really that traumatic to you, or that far out of the purview of encounters that you have with people? It's like the descriptions start to sound like a person who was like in a loving marriage their entire life and then had this experience that was totally defiling because it was completely outside of the normal scope of sexual encounters that they engaged in, and therefore found it shameful or degrading. Does anyone believe that to be true from a person who lives this kind of a lifestyle? And when they're using the kind of language of, let's say, more modest people, does it ruin the case for those modest people? I think I put that in the most delicate way possible. And then this is from MSNBC. Let's give it a listen.
Feelings about what happened have changed. So her description of being in the room with him, about his thought to put her on the apprentice, what he
That's
was
not
wearing.
Clearly at all. What's going on? I got premium internet right now. This is, I went through optimum negotiations. I prayed for the premium internet service. I lined up sponsors. We're spending like $160 a month for a direct line. Let's go. Let's try and play that again. When the news coverage is too good, they just start downgrading you.
Spoke today, your thoughts.
Her testimony today was remarkably consistent with what she told me in 2016. It was consistent on the facts. I think her feelings about what happened have changed. So her description of being in the room with him, about his thought to put her on the apprentice, what he was wearing, all of that totally consistent. But I think she now feels that there was more of an element. Told me about it in 2016. Her view was very blasé. I had sex with Donald Trump, no big deal. It didn't affect me. Now she seems increasingly unhappy about what happened. She didn't say he forced her. He didn't bar her from leaving the room. But she didn't like what happened. And that's the only element that I think is really significantly different from what I heard from her 8 years ago.
Maya, your thoughts on all of that and...
So apparently she was trying to play it up in court as if aspects of it was non-consensual and had left an impact on her. I think where some of this is becoming disjointed and things, you know, even your own memory can play tricks on you, is that when Michael Avenatti ended up going to jail and then Stormy Daniels ended up owing money to Donald Trump, sometimes Donald Trump, he's got Bugs Bunny syndrome. People go after him and sometimes they turn around and they're like, wait, I thought I was supposed to get money. How do I owe this person money? And then all of a sudden you're in the news as having lost. No one likes losing in life. It's not fun losing. It's particularly not fun losing when, I guess, you had sex with someone that you weren't excited to have sex with. the whole thing is that usually when it comes to sexual transactions, I guess you win and you walk away with money. And you're like, wait, I just had sex with the person I didn't want to have sex with. And publicly, I have to owe that person money. And then, listen, I guess all that could become shameful. Or you could be trying to play the game where you thought that that was going to lead to more work. But then people just thought that you broadcasting other people's business was actually disgusting. And it led to less work. And then all of a sudden, instead of putting fault in the actual incident that you lost, and so now you feel worse about yourself because you lost, you start reimagining what the earlier situation was so that you can place blame on that as well. All right, so anyways, I'll always love on MSNBC when they get something from someone that they weren't expecting, so they just got to move forward. They're like, okay, well, that's not what we expected, but we do have another person here, so why don't you speak so that no one realizes what that last guy said? Because what his last guy said was that he had spoken to her at the time, and she's kind of full of shit, because at the time, she was like, yeah, I'm a porn star, and I had sex with the dude, because we do those types of things. I ain't your grandma.
It's always a challenge if an incident is old enough. There are many incentives in the law to try to deal with things recently, and even if they get old enough, you're not allowed to deal with them. And yet it is fine from the court's view for her to have more feelings. She has been attacked and maligned, and people have human reactions to that as long as her underlying account does not somehow become perjurious.
Yeah, the jury's job is to decide the facts and decide whether they believe the witnesses, which witnesses they believe or don't believe. So the most important thing is whether the facts are consistent, because the job of the defense here is to suggest that Stormy Daniels was interested in money and willing to lie for it, or has had and changed her story over time for different reasons. And I think Jacob's point is an important one.
I just want to pause once again. Does any of this actually have any relevancy to some sort of illegal activity that Donald Trump is now in court for? Hush money payments aren't illegal. Trying to influence elections aren't illegal. Cheating on your wife isn't illegal. So this entire conversation here of this lady on SNBC telling us, well, it depends on the credibility of this witness in regards to what? Saying that Donald Trump engaged in an affair on his wife with, once again, is not illegal, and I don't believe even what this court case is about. Like, what exactly? We're hearing a lot of political analysis about things that I don't actually think are illegal or even relevant to this particular court case.
One that, I mean, Molly also made in the previous segment, which is the consistency, and that is something that helps juries figure out who they want to believe. But I would say that, you know, the most important testimony from a legal standpoint, when you look at what facts matter most, is when she was asked on direct examination by prosecutors, when the question was, you trying to sell your story and not getting a bite until that Access Hollywood tape, right? I mean, that was basically the line of questioning. And she said, yeah, that
feelings about what happened.
All right, I've had enough of that. And then this was from Fox News. Daniels has made multiple posts about Trump on social media, including writing that she was willing to go to jail before she has to pay a penny to Trump. I thought that this analyst was interesting. We don't usually read from Fox News on the show. The fact that she owes him $500,000 by order of a court owes Donald Trump $500,000 and said, I will never pay him. I will defy a court order. The defense is going to say she's willing to defy a court order. She's not willing to respect an order from a judge. Why is she going to respect this oath she took? So I thought it went quite poorly on cross-exam, the analyst said. And once again, I don't understand how trustworthy the witness is when their whole thing was that they were trying to, you know, I guess, extort you for money. And then they lost a lawsuit and that they owe you money. And now they're bitter about all that. And then you bring them into court to talk about the sexual encounter, and they start recounting it as being even worse than it had been because they're mad at you. I don't understand why that's, I guess, a credible witness, or what they even need to bring testimony about. I don't know why the sex part even needs. I guess Donald Trump stupidly denied it. Maybe if he had just said, yeah, we had had sex and I tried paying it off, then they wouldn't even have to have that aspect of the court case. All right, and then this was from Newsweek, Daniels told the court that she didn't take any drugs or drink, but she still blacked out in Trump's room. She told the jury she woke up on bed and wasn't wearing any clothes. Daniels said that she and Trump had sex in the missionary position. And once again, like I said, why the drip drip on the smut? Why do I got to go to 12 different places to get little drip drips on the way that it went down? Can I get the play-by-play? Can we get some sort of a sportscaster to just give me the play-by-play of what took place? You sat down, you ate. What were you eating? Was it good? Okay. And then you went to the bathroom. What kind of pajama pants was the guy wearing on the bed? When he said that he wanted to be spanked, how did he like to be spanked? What was the position that he took? How much spanking was going on? Did that get him hard? Then you ended up in the missionary position. Did you roll him over to get it done with? And then he was like, listen, you're too big to be on the top. You're going to have to be on the bottom. How long did he last? How long do you think you blacked out for? Did your top ever come off? Can't we just get the simple details here? And then this is the last thing on this trial. Trump faces jail threat for violating gag order. Here, I got to step around this. That's actually blocked my view of the part I wanted to read. Going forward, this court will have to consider a jail sanction, Merchant said, looking directly at Trump, who is seated at the defense table. The judge says the last thing he wanted to do was jail a former and possibly next president, but the violations were direct attack on the rule of law. Trump is the presumptive Republican presidential nominee. At what point does this court case go so to shit that the judge just apologizes and goes, yeah, you can slam all these people. I don't know why we're here. I'm sorry that I was a part of this thing. And this was terrible that we made you sit through this instead of campaigning. Doesn't this all just kind of lead to us not being a serious country? I mean, in all seriousness, we got some problems here. We've got Joe Biden transition us to green energy. How's that playing out? How is the forcibly trying to get these car companies to make green energy cars that no one was interested in? And Ford and others taking, $110,000 a loss per car? And think about the profits that they could have had or the improvements that they could have made on typical combustible engines. And now you got Biden. He's trying to work this new racket on mandates for coal plants, probably shutting down the coal plants. How much economic growth got lost by the fact that we went down this rabbit hole of this EV transition that we weren't ready for? How many migrants have come over this border? Do we need to be fighting either the Ukraine war right now or the Israel war right now? We got real problems in this country, and instead of having an election season and the ability of Trump to run and say, hey, here are some problems in this country right now, the entire news cycle is being dictated by this ridiculous court case about the sex that Donald Trump did in fact have and did in fact pay to cover up 7, 8, 9 or whatever amount of years ago. And this is what we're filling all of our time and efforts exploring, as opposed to having real conversations. And then as to how, by the way, send me an email, robsnewsroom@gmail.com. I would love to have someone explain to me how it is that courts are allowed to put gag orders on you. How is that not against free speech? How is it that you can, isn't that the ultimate actual like showcase of not free speech, is that you can be wrongfully accused of something, forced to go to a trial over it, and then you're not allowed to talk about it? And possibly, you know, showcase to the public that the court system itself is corrupt. Wouldn't it be a necessary element of free speech to be able to criticize the court system outside of court? Particularly, and we've talked about this case before, but that kid who was at least sentenced to jail, I don't know if he went to jail, but the kid who put out that tweet saying, hey, you can vote, you can text to vote for Hillary Clinton. And it wasn't even his meme. He retweeted somebody else's meme. And then they got someone else from the same 4chan group to testify against him as if they were actually some like elite, you know, Russian Delta Force to manipulate our election. But they brought the guy to some random jury in Brooklyn. And so they were able to get a conviction. They were able to cherry pick an area where that guy could get in a conviction. You're not allowed to talk about the corruption of that. If you were involved in that case, he might not have actually had a gag order. But you see what I'm saying? You can have corrupt court systems, and then it would be very important to go out there and talk about it. And then maybe they'd actually change the way that the court systems work. And then if the court system isn't corrupt, and in the public eye, some guy deserves the punishment that he got, then let him go talk about how horribly he was punished by the court. Because if anything, that would be broadcasting the justice of the court, which might convince other criminals, hey, it's not worth doing the crime. Isn't that part of the reason why we send people to jail or otherwise, is to prevent future crimes? All right, and then last thing, this is on the other Donald Trump court case, but Cannon indefinitely postpones Trump Mar-a-Lago documents trial. It seems like the Jack Smith documents trial. First, we had the January 6th one. Fannie Willis seemed to fuck that one up, so that one's going away. And now you got the Mar-a-Lago one where they raided, they took all the files, and apparently that one's being thrown out. To give you guys the short on why it's being getting rid of is, one, there's claims of tampering with the evidence that the prosecutors, when they took all of these things, they reorganized or removed files, which I guess makes it harder to have a conversation about how they were actually stored at Donald Trump's house and whether or not, I guess it's just witness tampering. Two, there was a wild article on Zero Hedge. Sorry, I read it last week and I meant to put it into the thing and I did not, but they were claiming that perhaps the Bidens actually did Donald Trump dirty and sent the specific documents to his house that he was then in trouble for. I just skimmed that article. I was like, man, that one sounds like that's right of an action movie, and Biden doesn't sound that smart. And so that sounds like too fantastic of a tale that they actually did him dirty and sent the documents that they were then saying that he couldn't have to his house. I don't know if that one's true. And I still think that there's a good chance that the documents he took was just about the opening of the investigation into him on all the Russia collusion nonsense. And that's why it was so dangerous for him to have, because he could actually showcase the deep state and all their inner workings. And then there was also, I guess, issues with how to handle the classified documents in court. And that if the whole thing is that he took documents that are so dangerous and you need a jury to, make a determination about how horrible it was that he had these documents. I guess he got an issue of how exactly you're going to be able to explore that in court. And that concludes the first section of today's Run Your Mouth podcast, all about the nonsense of the Stormy Daniels. And they're just drip dropping the smut. Just give me the smut. If we're already going to, instead of talking about serious topics, venture into the smut, don't drip it at me. Just give me the whole recap. And this episode segment was brought to you by ZephHemp.com, which I had to reach out to my good friend Wes from Zia Extraordinary Farms and tell him to hook me up with some more of that rattlesnake oil. I need it. I really fucked up my arm skiing. Now I gotta actually maybe not ski as hard next year or something. But anyways, I like it. I like taking it. I like massaging my titty with it. I like getting it all up, greased up in my hand. I like getting in there, working whatever the hell is fucked up. And then also when I shave my head, I like rubbing it all in before I get into the shower. It's got the, I don't know what it does for me, but I just like it. And so, you know, you might have a tit that you'd like to massage with oil too. And so why not use the official tit massaging oil of the Run Your Mouth podcast and go to ZephHemp.com, use promo code RYM25. And you get yourself, I think it's 25% off. That would make sense. That would check out if Wes set it up with any other of a discount with that number 25 in there. That wouldn't make sense. So now at this point, he better honor the 25% discount off of the fact that he made the number 25, unless it's even better, in which case you're like, oh, wow, I get even more of a discount. But anyways, guys, support the sponsors. RZephHemp.com, Z Extraordinary Farms, promo code RYM25. Get yourself some rattlesnake oil and massage yours or your lover's titties. All right, let's take some comments over here. Here, we can go full screen so you guys can still see my pretty face. Wow, there was a lot of activity in the chat, but I didn't take any breaks there. I was cooking through that topic. David Allen, bingo, Robbie, you hit the nail on the head. You know what? In terms of just picking a random comment that you're going to read, someone letting you know that whatever the hell you were saying was exactly right. Thank you, Mr. David Allen. Relevance is the word. Her testimony is entirely irrelevant. Nobody disputes the payment. There you go. Thank you, Mr. David Allen. Look at that. We spent 25 minutes on what David Allen was able to say in two sentences. Don't get into broadcasting, David Allen. You wouldn't be able to fill enough time for sponsors. You would just get in there, you'd say your two words, and you'd be like, that's our episode. Have a nice day. Fenner 122, Rob, keep up the fire. Thank you, sir. Trump got in her rear naked choke. That's why she passed out. Unlikely. David Allen, the judge allowed this witness, even though he must know that it is a possible reversible error and could get the entire case thrown out. All right, let's jump ahead. Take two more comments. I like this David Allen guy. Actually, Trump paid her voluntarily, which she accepted voluntary money to talk about something. That's not exactly a gag order. No, that's not what I was describing. I was talking about Trump not being allowed to talk about the court case is what I was talking about. All right, we'll take two more. Eric Shaver, you can use it for enemas. I'm not sure that you want to put Zia up your ass. I sometimes do, you know, but I'm not sure that that's the official or better usage of it. Stormy Daniels, Clinton massage oil. Maybe Zia should go work out. I mean, she's got plenty of publicity right now. Maybe if she did, she could sit at the witness stand and go, I didn't like what the encounter, but if he had had snake oil and he could have used that to massage my tit, then I would have liked it. So if you want to make sure that your mistress, who you paid hush money payments to, not to talk about a case, doesn't talk about a case, make sure to use Zia Extraordinary Farms tit oil on your lover's tits, because then they will have had such a nice time that they don't talk about the interaction. All right, we're just taking the few more. David, you know, you earned your right for multiple comment reads in the first comment, but your comments have fallen off. Let's see if you redeem yourself now on this third one. Robbie, I think you missed part of the story where they revealed Biden was coordinating with the prosecutor to send Trump documents at Mar-a-Lago that they later came and seized. I think that was the part I was referencing as having half read the article. Quit accusing me. I liked it when you were on my side, David Allen. Luke Sacher, I wonder which newspaper she used to spank him. That's a good question. All right, last one. Philip Vecchio, Stormy Daniels had a gag order. All right, what do I got next? Let's go, producer man. What topic is next on the books? Oh, this was from the New York Times. RFK Jr. says doctor found a dead worm in his brain, which, you know how, like, they say that we vote for who you'd want to party with? Like, Donald Trump, he doesn't drink beers, but you can do some Sudafed with Donald Trump. Biden, I bet whatever Biden's doing to stay awake is a real good time. I bet you take what Biden does to stay awake and you could be making Hunter Biden money within like 2 weeks. I mean, not like off your dad's name, like you would just see like stock picks, like in that movie Limitless. You know what I mean? You take that Joe Biden chemical and you're for sure taking years off your life. You got to be like above a certain age. You know what I mean? Where it's like the parts aren't working that well, so you're boosting the parts. But if your parts are working pretty good and you put it into overdrive with that thing that that Joe Biden's taking, that's a bad time. But typically speaking, they say we vote for who would be most interesting to have a beer with. And for a time, you know, you would have thought Obama might be interesting to have a beer with. But now, you know, he's gay. You're like, this guy might try and sleep with me. Right. I still think of all them anyways. The point I was trying to make before I made that bigotry line for absolutely no reason is that I bet when RFK Jr. was partying, he was probably the hard, like, you know what I mean? You'd just be trying to have beers and he'd be pulling out the hard drugs. You'd be sitting there and I'm going to snort this worm. I just did him as Biden. I had it down earlier. But anyways, he had a worm in his brain. What partying was he doing that he ended up with a worm in his brain? That was a guy, you know, you'd just be having a couple of beers and then the acid be coming out and like they'd be, you know, snorting the salt shaker and you'd be like, dude, we're just trying to have a couple beers here. All right. This clip came across my screen on Twitter and I figured out how to fix Kamala Harris. Clearly, Kamala Harris has a likability issue. We've all seen it. She's laughing at awkward times. She explains stuff like a three-year-old at other times. Kamala Harris has a likability problem. And as we come into this election season, and Joe Biden is clearly probably not going to survive another 4 years, and we look at the vice president and think, hey, I might be stuck with you. You know, we're all a little bit concerned. Can Kamala Harris swing it? And I figured out what she needs to do, the pivot Kamala Harris needs to make so that she can win over the American people and be more likable. And let's give this a play.
I've been thinking that we really all need a tremendous hug in the world right now.
Yeah.
But in our country, we need you to be Mamala of the country.
Doesn't she just need to go full-scale Wookiee noises?
I've been thinking that we really all need a tremendous hug in the world right now. But in our country, we need you to be Mama of the country.
Yeah. you get her up there and you go, so Kamala, what kind of you think we're going to be able to solve the problems at our border? Kamala, there's been a lot of citizens dying in Palestine. Are we going to continue to send weapons to the Israelis? All right. What other nonsense do we have next? Okay, this was great. So Kristi Noem, obviously, she made a blunder in trying to brag about the fact that she put her dog down, and I will break down that blunder in a moment, the strategic error she made from a persuasion standpoint. But I saw this clip on YouTube, and tell me that the beginning of this doesn't sound like it's supposed to be one of my spoof news intros. Just like, I'm just saying, listening to it, I laughed and I was like, did I write that as a joke? Here we go.
She killed her dog and bragged about it in her book. And that may have killed Kristi Noem's political future. She said their wire-haired pointer was untrainable. Well, now we're visiting a home that has three of the breed.
Okay.
Meet McCoy, our Jim Murray.
What a segment also where they like, Kristi Noem likes killing these dogs. Here's a place where you can see a cute one and an expert all about the dog that she likes to kill.
His new best pal.
He's definitely rambunctious.
McCoy is a wire-haired pointer, the same breed as Cricket, the dog Kristi Noem shot dead in her upcoming autobiography.
By the way, No Going Back is an unfortunate title for when you put out information like you killed a dog.
No Going Back. The South Dakota governor describes Cricket as untrainable. But Tyler Smith, who cares for three wire-haired pointers, including McCoy, doesn't buy that.
Good boys.
He says it just takes patience and time.
You know, the thing that Kristi Noem didn't have when she killed her dog. All right, here's the mistake that I think she made. And I've worked in sales. And I've even trained other salespeople at times in my life, and I've worked on sales teams with women who were better at sales than I were. The thing about them and their selling was that it was kind of feminine and was not in the way that I would sell. And the way that I would sell would be a lot more aggressive. It would be a lot more mechanical. There would be absolutely no, hey, I'm a little cute chick involved on the phone. There'd be none of that. And so all day, I could train other men on, hey, here's the way that I sell. I don't know that my tricks would work as well for women because they're persuasive in a different way. And like, I think sometimes women don't like to own the power that they have. It's like, it's okay to be feminine. It's okay to be light, like, you know what I mean? I don't know. There's just like, and so I think sometimes they try and go overly aggressive the other way to be like, no, I'm one of the dudes and I can make harsh decisions also. But here's the thing. There's never been a male political figure that likes to run off of, like even Biden, his whole thing is, oh, I'm so compassionate. And even Donald Trump, I guess we can all envision that he's willing to make harsh choices. So even he's got to pretend to be a little bit more likable. Have you ever seen a dude who just would run for office and be like, listen, I'm so ready to defend this country and so ready to make the tough decisions that, my God, even if there's a dog that I love, I'm willing to put it down. Because I think that's what she was thinking. Like, listen, I get it. Not everyone thinks that women are strong enough to run the country. So I want to let them know that when it comes to making tough choices that you got to make, I'm ready to do it. And I won't think twice and I'll do it and I'll get it done. But people like to pretend like world leaders are more compassionate than that. And like, you know, you gotta play the wise lady card. You don't gotta play the, like, that. It just sounds harsh. Anyways, strategic blunder, which, you know, everyone jumped right on. Okay, this was from last week, but I did want to give it a mention. This was the Supreme Court case, which has not been decided yet. I don't think it's going to be decided for a little bit, on presidential immunity. And I was making the argument that I don't think presidents should be immune. And I'd like to better understand why it is that they're unable to do their job without being able to engage in illegal behavior. And I was thinking that the quickest fix would be is actually create, like, the same way that they do warrants, create, you know, a secondary Supreme Court type thing of judges that rule on whether or not what a president's about to do is legal or illegal behavior, so that he's got quick access to decisions. Like, the current system is, I guess you kind of got to go to your lawyer, and then your lawyer decides whether or not they think that they'll be able to defend it at a later point in time. Listen, I'm not saying I got a perfect system here, and we could probably give it more thought on the structure of it. I'm more pointing out I'd like to hear a better structured or thought out argument as to why the president can't do his job unless we give him immunity from illegal behavior. If something that he's doing is so important, why not restructure it so that that activity would be legal? What is it? What is the specific illegal things that we think a president needs to be able to do in order to get his job done? And if it's, he'll never be able to act under the concern of future prosecution, then we have enough resources to get a team of judges together, and then he's immune. If every single time, let's say we review later at a point in time that those judges were wrong, and then maybe you got to do another review where you find out that that judgment is corrupt, which then brings you down the whole rabbit hole of that government gets corrupt, and that's why we probably shouldn't put so many resources into it. But anyways, I want to read this. This is from ABC News. On the other side, several conservative justices appear primarily concerned about future bad faith prosecutors against former presidents and whether that would hamper their ability to make the tough decisions entailed by the job. Now, I don't know. There's just something that bothers me about, well, what are we doing to try and solve the existence of bad faith prosecutors? Unless you're saying that we understand that the justice system is corrupt, there will always be bad faith prosecutors, and so therefore, well, then shouldn't none of us ever be tried for crimes? I guess no one should be tried. Like, are we saying that judgment systems don't work because of bad faith prosecutors? Or do you have to create some sort of, like, working system that somehow safeguards or polices for that? I don't know. Maybe that was from last week. All right, this is the last topic for today. This was making the rounds, but before we do, let's shout out another sponsor, Sheath. Guys, it's summer season. You don't want to have gross, sweaty balls. Maybe like me, you tore your tit, and now you're getting a little bit fatter and also trying to do more squats to overcompensate it, and now your thighs are getting a little bit fat, and they're rubbing up against each other. You got that friction. You got that chafing, and you know how you get rid of it? You upgrade your underwear to sheathunderwear.com. Use promo code RYM. You get yourself 20% off the greatest underwear that's ever graced the balls of man. I like the long ones, the Donald Cerrone's, the one that go up just above the knee. I find that's where you get all that smooth, nice action. You can exercise without getting all chafed up and disgusting. Go to sheathunderwear.com. Use promo code RYM. Get yourself 20% off the greatest underwear that's ever graced the balls of man. Be ready for the summer months. And come enjoy Porch Tour. All right. So this is this was making the rounds last week of a congressional act that looks to reduce anti-Semitism. Anti-Semitism is on the rise in the United States of America, and government needs to take action to reduce, right? The act might be cited as the Anti-Semitism Awareness Act of 2023. It exists to reverse the normalization of anti-Semitism and counter anti-Semitic discrimination. Okay, so in other words, Congress has an act to combat the rise of anti-Semitism. Now, what happens when this is enacted? Do they end up prosecuting more people? Is just some show of nothingness that leads to nothing? Do all congressional acts come across my Twitter feed that I'm even aware of it? No, this might be nonsense that even if it's enacted, it does nothing. Every once in a while you read about these stupid bullshit laws in the books, like you can't finger your wife's asshole on a Tuesday. And you're like, wait, why is it only on Mondays and Thursdays I can finger my wife's asshole? And they're like, I don't know, that's just been all the law in Kentucky for the last 100 years. And you're like, all right, well, if let's say there's witnesses to the fact that I was doing it on a Tuesday, are you actually going to prosecute me for it? Like, we've never prosecuted anyone for that law anyways, but it's just on the books. So this might be like fingering your wife's asshole on a Tuesday type law where they put it on the books, everyone agrees that it's stupid, and no one ever does anything with it. But with that introduction being said, they got this new law to try and combat the rise in anti-Semitism. I guess everyone across the board can agree that anti-Semitism is on the rise, and Congress has to step in to reduce anti-Semitism. So now, if you're saying that there's anti-Semitism, I would think that that's actually bigotry towards Jewish people. But in they're going for a definition of anti-Semitism, which this is, by the way, from the little bit of like agreements I've looked at, anytime people don't want to put actual information into an agreement and then they're referencing something else that you have to then go look up on your own time, like that's always a red flag. Like talk about fine print. It's so much worse than fine print when you don't even put it on the document, when you just reference some other document and then the document references some other thing. And then you got to go back to the guy. You're like, listen, I'll sign this thing, but you got to put all the information that I'm agreeing to on these pages. So that's always a red flag when it goes, we're going to reference this other thing as being the working definition for what anti-Semitism is. So now there are other pieces here of what's part of their working definition. And I will also say that there's a structural irony here of going, hey, we want group privileges, but if anyone else looks at us as being one group, then that's anti-Semitic. As a group of Jews, we all want the privileges that this wider definition of anti-Semitism will exist. And so we'll get the privilege of being in the Jewish group. But if any of you guys look at us as a group, that's anti-Semitic by you. So we're forging the group for protection purposes. But if you look at our group and think that we have better protection because the group that we formed, or even call attention to the group that we're formed, you're then being anti-Semitic. Group privileges, that's the core of Jewiness right there. All right, here we go. This is from the document referenced in the Congressional Act to reduce anti-Semitism. What is considered anti-Semitic? It includes accusing Jewish citizens of being more loyal to Israel or to the alleged priorities of Jews worldwide than to the interest of their own nations. Why would accusing somebody of that be considered anti-Semitic? And if you were to have someone in office who might be acting in the interest of, let's say, Israel or another organization more than being America first, how would you be able to question that if just the question itself was considered anti-Semitic? And then once again, I don't know if then doing any of these things are considered illegal, but it would seem to me like that would be a necessary thing that you'd be able to do in a country that had free speech, is explore whether or not if someone's acting in the interest of someone else. I don't understand why that would be considered. I understand why if you were engaging this behavior, you would want to label it as anti-Semitic and then have it so that nobody could question the behavior. But I don't understand why the very questioning of it would be considered anti-Semitic. Let's continue. Denying the Jewish people the right to self-determination, e.g. by claiming the existence of a state of Israel, is a racist endeavor. Once again, I don't see that as being anti-Semitic. Anti-Semitic is discrimination against someone specifically for being Jewish. Looking at, I mean, now you're wrapping in, once again, you're pulling the same trick where you're wrapping up the state of Israel with the Jewish people. So you're not looking at it as a government. You're looking at that government as being the representatives of the Jewish people. And yes, it is a state that doesn't allow, you know, full citizens unless you are a Jewish person. So, I mean, how would you define that as not a race? I mean, why don't you just own it as we're the privileged group that gets to engage in a racist endeavor and make that your argument? But, I mean, unless you're being dishonest, I mean, the word endeavor, I guess it doesn't exist just to, well, at its core, I guess it is a racist endeavor. It's not the terminology I would like to use for it. I would prefer to put a more positive spin on we're trying to have a homeland because, you know, we thought we had a right from it for the Bible, and we like being able to live amongst each other in a place that we feel is safe, and that because of previous moments in history, we have a right to be racist against other people and have our own government that doesn't include other religions. But then you'd have to do it peacefully with your neighbors and own the fact that, yeah, I guess it is a racist endeavor. All right. Applying double standards by requiring of it behavior not expected or demanded of any other democratic nation. Once again, just sounds like something that you can't. So because then you go, oh, well, every democratic nation kills civilians. So if you're telling us that we can't kill civilians, then you're specifically being anti-Semitic. I don't know. Once again, it sounds like we're grouping together. No one's allowed to criticize or ask any questions. And if you do, you're being anti-Semitic. And if you point to the fact that we've created a group here and our group's going to have special privileges, that's anti-Semitic as well. That was a good defensive maneuver here of get the group together, claim enforce, use your power to get special privileges, and then tell people if you acknowledge the fact that we seem to have been able to group together and exert our power, mentioning that's anti-Semitic. Let's continue. Using the symbols and images associated with classic anti-Semitism, e.g. claims of Jews killing Jesus or blood libel, to characterize Israel or Israelis. Oddly enough, conservatives got upset about that because I guess in some places Christianity is actually, or the Gospels are taught alongside the idea that the Jews did kill Jesus. And so they feel that this is against their freedom to practice religion because it would force them, I guess, to not study those parts of the gospel. That one's over my head. I don't know that one way or the other. All right. And then last one, drawing comparisons of contemporary Israeli policy to that of the Nazis. I don't know. We're calling people Nazis all the time. Everyone's a Nazi. Donald Trump was Hitler, worse than Hitler, better than the Nazis, worse than the Nazis. I don't understand why that would be instantly anti-Semitic. And if Israel was actually doing something that was so terrible that you felt the comparison was in order, and did a good job of actually highlighting the, you know, that maybe even Israelis would go, oh shit, we're being as bad as those people that we've been complaining about, might actually get them to change. All right, and then accusing Jews as a people of being responsible for real or imagined wrongdoing committed by a single Jewish person or group. There's that Jew move that I was saying of we're gonna group together and we're gonna have the protections of a group, but then we don't want to be looked at as a group, or even for acts committed by non-Jews. All right, that's enough of that topic. And then, of course, in the reporting about this, which seems to be a suppression of free speech and seems to be Israel exerting more power and influence over our government to wrap up nice Jewish people like me into their atrocities and going, hey, listen, if you're complaining about what we're doing, you're just being anti-Semitic. New York Times, bill to combat anti-Semitism on campuses prompts backlash from the right. And then the whole thing, which just should be, why is there a specific bill about anti-Semitism? Why is it using the definitions of another organization? And why do these, why do some of these things just seem to be a suppression of free speech? Why would this be the definition of anti-Semitism? The entire conversation managed to just get to the outrage about whether or not you're allowed to teach that Jews killed Jesus, as if that was the only problem with this. Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, Republican of Georgia, said the legislation could make it illegal to assert that Jews killed Jesus, punishing Christians for believing the gospel, pivoting the entire conversation to just that one thing. All right, last sponsor for today, and then we got more show coming at you. YoKratom.com, home of the $60 kilo. If you are into Kratom products, go to YoKratom.com, and you can get your entire kilo of Kratom for just $60. I've been boozing much harder on the road these days because I decided I wasn't going to be drinking at home. And now, like it used to be, if you're at a show, it'd be like, I don't know, I drink every night at home, whatever. I'll have a beer. I'm working right now. Now it's like I don't drink at home, and you're like, wait, you'll serve me all this whiskey? Y'all have more of this whiskey. But when I'm at home, I'm taking the Red Ming Dot Kratoms, and it's a nice little even. It's a nice time. No, I'm not advocating for it, but I'm just telling you, it's a nice time. And you can get an entire kilo of it for just $60. That's just my personal experience of thinking it's a nice time. But, you know, you might not like it, and I wouldn't take it every day. But YoKratom.com, home of the $60 kilo. All right, I want to play this video because this kind of ties into what I was talking about last week of, you know, live your life and don't care about other people so much. And so this was giant. I didn't go to my college graduation. I don't know how big or how small it was. I didn't go because I told my parents I'd graduated and I hadn't graduated. And then by the time I graduated, I was going to be like, hey, remember 2 years ago when I was supposed to have graduated? I didn't want to do that. So anyways, I didn't go to my college graduation. My high school graduation, I did not enjoy sitting through. If anything, I learned from my high school graduation, why would I go to a thing to listen to the speeches? Why do I got to congratulate the people that were better at being here? School sucked. I didn't like being here. This wasn't fun for me, and I didn't excel at it. So now I got to get further punished and show up here to celebrate the kid that was better at this thing. And then the principal gets to get by. I don't ever like listening to the principal. I never like listening to this rabbi. Now I got to sit here and listen to more of these people, but not just that. Pretend like it's a celebration of the authority that you exerted over me, of this things that weren't important that we all had to show up here and pretend like they were important. great. Yeah, the kid that did well and will be going on to the better college and making more money than the rest of us, I guess we can all sit around and clap for him. And he's already going to live a good life. Why do we got to get together and do all this? So anyways, that's my general take on, and then if you're, by the way, and having to show up to your relative's one, it's like, why don't we all cut ourselves a slack? Don't do birthdays as an adult. Just don't do it. Who wants to leave their house and get together with other human beings? And then if I invite you to mine, then I got to go to your, let's just all cut each other's a break and not have to have these social obligations. That's the way I feel. I don't even remember if I showed up to my sister's. Maybe I did for one. And I was like, I'm not doing this anymore. What do I got to sit here and clap and sit through this boring shit? I'll cut you a break. I won't go to my graduation, and then I'm not showing up to yours. How's that for a deal? I'll shake on funerals. You don't do a funeral, I won't go to yours. You don't have to go to mine. Let's shake on it. You can just both stay home and move on with their life. How's that for some autistic, not human being thinking? All right, anyways, I don't know why I had to go on that run. Let's just watch this. All right, so you get Palestinian protesters. Maybe they went to the school. I don't know the whole story. But they disrupt the thing. They got to be taken out. And I just want to take a look at how unworkable this perspective on life is. Because there are terrible things happening around the globe all of the time. And so I guess if mentally you're going to go, hey, how can I go enjoy this thing while this other terrible thing is happening? You can no longer live a life. If that is the standard that you want to live by mentally, of, hey, there's an injustice going on, and so while this injustice is going on, what are you going to spend your whole life on a food strike? Are you never going to go out? You're never going to enjoy any moment ever? Or you're never going to allow other people to enjoy a moment in their life because there's some other horrible, terrible thing happening at another point in time right now? There will always be horrible and terrible things, and there are times at which, if you care about these things, go out, you can go protest, but why do you got to ruin other people's thing? And I understand it, because in your head, you go, well, what's happening right now is so terrible. How can we possibly have this moment? How can we possibly enjoy ourselves? How can we possibly, that's not a workable system. It's every single time, like, can I show up at everybody's thing and go, the mutilation of kids right now is so terrible. How can we possibly have this ceremony? Or, I don't know, should people that think babies, deaths, or murder show up to every single graduation and go, we can't have this graduation ceremony because right now there are babies being killed. Everybody has a cause. And yeah, there's a lot of horrible things happening in the world. And there are places like start a podcast and yell at it to the 366 live people that want to show up. Because guess what? They're sitting bored in their cars right now. They got to go to work. They got to do this. They're stuck in an airport. They're stuck wherever the hell they are. And they're like, instead of being stuck with my thoughts or having to look at this spreadsheet or be bored out of my mind, I'll just listen to whatever the fuck Rob's yelling about. Go do that. But I'm just saying, like, your thing is not more important than everybody else's cause, and it's an unworkable system to go, we can never enjoy a moment of life because there's this other thing that's happening right now. I think humanity in life is more about going, yeah, there's a lot of terrible shit on, but we're still going to enjoy this moment, or I can still be with my family, I can still eat this piece of cake, I can eat my Red Band Doc Kratom late at night. If anything, it's about ignoring all the terrible shit that exists in the universe and just enjoying what you can. And then that creates some positivity because you got some joy. At a minimum, you've enjoyed yourself. And so that creates a little bit of good in the world. And then maybe you get to share some of your goodness with another person. It creates a little bit more good. A bunch of people all get together and they celebrate something. That creates some good. But then if every single time we got to stop the thing and do absolutely nothing on account of some other negativity, then everyone's just, you let the negativity win. What, are we all just going to stop life? We're all just going to do nothing on account of the thing that people in other places are doing terrible things? How's that a working system? And if everyone else wants to play the confidence game of, well, my cause is the one cause that's so high, mighty, and injustice, I could walk around everywhere and just start screaming about the Federal Reserve stealing all of our money all the time through inflation. And let everyone know, hey, listen, don't live your life, don't do anything, don't be with your family. We've got to end this theft that's going on. All right. What else we got left? I think... I got three topics. Maybe we'll save this for the next episode. I did have a hippie thought on war. That was enough of a rant on, leave people alone. I have this thing on Social Security. I yell too much for one day. It's good. It's good. We did an hour. An hour's good. An hour's good. We'll save all this stuff for the next show. Probably back Friday with another episode. Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Maybe back to Monday. I don't fucking know. Guys, Sheath, Yo Kratom, Zia, thank you for your loyal support of the Run Your Mouth podcast. And then, of course, please, guys, this is the big show for me. Sunday, 6 p.m. I talked it up to my friends, really funny people. I said, come out, forget celebrating Mother's Day, forget that mom of yours. I've got a show at Brooklyn, and the Brooklyn people, they're nice to me. They give me some guest spots during the week. I'm able to work on jokes. Be nice to get a good showing of the Run Your Mouth Part of the Problem family coming out to that. So if you're available, 6 p.m., come hang out. I got nothing doing afterwards. We can all go to Martha's together and eat cake. Even though I said this week that until my tits back and I can go back to bench pressing and lifting heavy, I'm not eating cake. But if you guys come out to my show, Martha's, excellent bakery. Unless there's a line because there's too many people celebrating Mother's Day, because I eat there too often to possibly do a line thing. Coffee's excellent, though. We could just go get the coffee and stand outside and pretend like we were able to eat cake. Anyways, guys, if you're interested in the Porch Store dates, you go to porchstore.com. There's a lot of dates there. There's more coming. You got a porch in Atlanta, Boston, Richmond, Virginia. You hit me up. Other than that, we're done. The show's over. I'll be back. And then we'll talk more and yell about other things. This was fun. I like this one. Later, everybody. Have a nice day.